It's now not a publication anymore. I sold it to my editor and it's there. I had had to begin to take what talents I had and use them in a field that I never had. You never know where you're going to go and how a career is going to be. It's a matter of kind of thinking you can do this and having a little faith in yourself and realizing if you have the idea, do it. Don't let age or time stop you. I think that kind of wraps it up for me today. I thank you for having me, and I look forward to coming back another time. Thanks.
On that note, Nancy Cole Silverman, we will be sure to talk again.
Thank you.
On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission.
This is John Crumshaw for KPFK with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. Please make your contribution online at kpfk.org. Support KPFK so that your kids' grandkids or someone else's great-grandkids can listen when they grow up. Do it for them. Pledge today. Dial 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Support KPFK today. Radio for the future. The truth is that I
never shook my shadow. This is Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. In an infuriating and incomprehensible decision, the Biden administration once again failed to uphold a red line it set for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Israel not only failed to comply with the U.S. 30-day deadline to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza, according to United Nations and aid organizations, they made the crisis dramatically worse in that time. Nevertheless, the Biden administration announced that there would be no change to the U.S. military funding and weapons shipments to the Netanyahu regime. At the same time, last week, the left blocked a far-right attack on our movements. In just a few days, organizations drove hundreds of thousands of calls and emails to House representatives demanding they oppose legislation that would have granted the incoming Trump administration unchecked power to shut down nonprofit organizations it doesn't like. With so many people taking action across the country, 11 no votes from the first time the bill was voted on last spring became 145 votes to block the bill this time. Many are hoping for the calls and emails to continue this week, as for the first time in U.S. history, there will be a vote in Congress to block weapons shipments to Israel. Senators Bernie Sanders, Peter Welch, and Jeff Merkley have introduced 6 joint resolutions of disapproval to stop up to $20 billion in weapons shipments approved by the Biden administration in August. Approximately 70% of the weaponry used in Israel's current assaults on Gaza and Lebanon have been provided by Congress and approved by the Biden administration. With us today to discuss those resolutions, or JRDs, is one of our favorite multi-talented congressional watchdogs, Hassan Al-Tayeb. Hassan Al-Tayeb is an author, songwriter, and the legislative director for Middle East Policy and the advocacy organizer for the Friends Committee on National Legislation. He's a former co-director of the national advocacy group Just Foreign Policy, where he led their lobbying work to advance a more progressive foreign policy in the Middle East and Latin America, and played a major role in the successful passage of the War Powers Resolution to end U.S. military aid to the Saudi-UAE coalition's war in Yemen. Hassan's writings and commentaries have been featured in numerous news outlets, including CNN, BBC World News, The Hill, Al Jazeera, The Intercept, and The Intercept, among others. It is always a great pleasure to welcome our friend Hassan Al-Tayeb back to Middle East in Focus.
Hey, thank you.
Sorry about that. Hassan, perhaps the best place to start is if you can describe what a JRD, or Joint Resolution of Disapproval, is, which is the mechanism Senator Sanders has employed to try to halt these specific arms shipments to Israel, and also how JRDs work in the Senate.
Esty, thank you so much for having me on. This is indeed a historic vote. In August, the Biden administration approved a series of arms transfers to Israel totaling more than $20 billion. And joint resolutions of disapproval, or JRDs, led by Senators Sanders, Welch, Merkley, and Schatz, would block the sale of many of these offensive weapons, including joint direct attack munitions, 120-millimeter tank shells that have been used in strikes that have killed thousands of civilians, including aid workers and journalists in Gaza over the last year. In 1974, Congress passed legislation requiring that the president provide notifications of major arms sales and created a process to block arms sales by passing expedited resolutions. And what this does is allow senators to force a fast-tracked vote and debate. And a lot of resolutions, they get stuck in the committee process. And this allows them to cut in front of the line and actually force the vote unilaterally. So they've done that. They've expedited procedures under the Arms Export Control Act and will, again, you know, force the first major vote in Congress to halt weapon sales to Israel.
Fantastic. Key Senate Democrats have actually been pushing the Biden administration to end Israel's war on Gaza in order to reverse the trajectory of the humanitarian crisis that it has created, which is now spreading across the Middle East. We're talking about people's homes, hospitals, schools, and in fact, entire Palestinian families in Gaza that are being wiped out. Hassan, can you describe some of the specifics about the six JRDs that Senator Sanders and others has shared with their colleagues and is asking for their support on?
Yeah, thank you again. So U.S. law is clear that we're not supposed to sell weapons and give security assistance to governments that are committing gross violations of human rights or governments that are blocking humanitarian aid. So Senator Sanders and his colleagues have rightfully said they're going to take this initial step to block some of these weapon sales. He's introduced six resolutions, SJ Res 111 through SJ Res 116. And these, again, this is a $20 billion sale. 111 are the tank rounds. That has the most support currently, with Sanders, Welch, Merkley, and Schatz on as co-sponsors. They've got high explosive mortar rounds, F-15 sales. That's an $18 billion total of that sale. Joint direct attack munitions, and these are the guidance kits that they attach to things like 2,000-pound bombs that have been used to blow up Rafah, blow up targets in Lebanon as well. They also have anti-jam and global positioning system receivers that also help with some of these offensive strikes. So again, we don't know which ones that Sanders will force the vote on. If I had to guess, it would be the tank rounds and the joint direct attack munition. So those are the ones that have the most support so far. And we did just see that Senator Kaine, he's publicly supporting them with a statement earlier, I believe, in September. And Senator Warren just came on this week as a co-sponsor. We've been working hard on Capitol Hill. FCNL just had our lobby day, our annual meeting. And hundreds of Quakers descended on Capitol Hill. And we had 100 meetings with congressional offices this week. And all I'm saying is that I think there are some unusual suspects that might jump on these, which is showing that Senate Democrats and even some Republicans are, one, upset that the Biden administration has allowed this horrible war to fester. They are upset that Austin and Blinken sent a letter saying, you know, you've got 30 days to increase aid access, Israel, and we're seeing an imminent famine, again, not in days, not in weeks, but in days in northern Gaza, and some of the lowest aid numbers we've seen since the start of the war. We've got 100 national organizations on board. J Street just endorsed the resolution. I think over 2,000 rabbis just endorsed the resolution. So this is really building up momentum and just in time, because we need to send a strong message to the lame duck Biden admin, President-elect Trump, and Benjamin Netanyahu, because this has got to stop immediately.
I couldn't agree with you more. You and I talked offline about California, which is supposed to be such a progressive state, yet neither of our senators have committed, in spite of activists up and down the state doing demonstrations and actions. I know in San Francisco at 4 p.m. on Tuesday at 1 Post Street, there will be another demonstration trying to get California senators to join. Additionally, Senator Sanders' office provided for his colleagues and the public and activists examples of how the specific weapons and equipment these JRDs are seeking to restrict have been used in attacks on Lebanese and Palestinians in contravention of U.S. law and international law. To back up his arguments about why the Senate should block further shipments of these weapons. Can you discuss some of those examples, Hassan?
Yeah, so when we're making the case to lawmakers right now, we bring up three key points. And one is the overwhelming documentation of harm to civilians. Independent human rights and conflict monitors like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have thoroughly documented the Israeli military's use of these weapons from the United States in attacks that have killed Palestinian civilians. The tank shells in particular, those were used to use in the Flower Massacre. And we also saw rounds in these JRDs that were used to kill journalists in Lebanon. And again, Amnesty has done so much documentation, so it's all out there. And President Biden has even described Israeli government attacks as indiscriminate, which is a violation of the laws of war. Humanitarian groups have also said that the Israelis are blocking humanitarian aid, which is pushing Gazans to the brink of starvation and over, and also causing the spread of deadly diseases like polio. And this is, again, contrary to U.S. law and policy. Just to dig into that a little bit deeper, Section 620I of the Foreign Assistance Act says you're not supposed to use U.S. weapons, and you're not supposed to sell U.S. weapons to governments that are blocking U.S. humanitarian assistance. And that's what it was reported by ProPublica that USAID officials are saying is happening. So that is just wrong. You've also got the Leahy laws, which say that, we're supposed to restrict military assistance to units that are violating human rights. You've got Section 502B of the Foreign Assistance Act. And the Biden administration's own arms transfer policy, which is known as the CAT policy, says that you're not supposed to be selling weapons to countries that engage in this kind of abuse of civilians. So there is every reason for people to vote in favor. The last reason we say to members is really clear, that we need this leverage for a ceasefire, aid access, civilian protection, because there is no military solution to this crisis in Israel-Palestine and now escalating across the Middle East in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Jordan, and Iran. We need to get these hostages home, and we need to finally wrap this up and get Gaza and the entire region on the road to healing. And by stopping these arms sales, and even by, getting a strong vote, even if we don't quite get to the 51 mark where we need to pass it, and obviously it's going to be difficult to get to the 67 mark where we need to get senators to override a potential veto. But that's going to send a clear message that, one, military aid to Israel is not a guarantee. It's no longer unconditional, and that members of Congress are going to actually force votes to block it. We're going to say that it's time to bring the hostages home, get a peaceful settlement, and that diplomacy is the way to resolve this, not more weapons of war and not more war crimes. So I think this is exactly what it's long overdue, frankly. This should have happened a long time ago, but I am grateful that it is happening.
You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Esti Chandler, very happy to be joined today by our friend Hassan Al-Tayyab, the Legislative Director for Middle East Policy for the Friends Committee on National Legislation, about six joint resolutions of disapproval, which Senators Bernie Sanders, Peter Welch, Jeff Merkley, and Senator Katz have put forth in an attempt to stop up to $20 billion of weapons shipments approved by the Biden administration in August from being sent to Israel and used to further the genocide being inflicted by the Netanyahu regime and the Biden administration on the people of Gaza. I hope to see many of you this afternoon at KPFK's Town Hall, 2 to 6 p.m. at the Center for Black Power on West 43rd Place. Details about that event are up at the KPFK website at kpfk.org. Hassan, since the start of Israel's current assault on Gaza, polls show that a majority of Americans express their support for restrictions on U.S. shipments of weapons to Israel. In fact, a poll from CBS last June showed that 61% of all Americans, including 77% of Democrats, said the U.S. should not send any weapons to Israel. Further, demands to restrict arms didn't begin in October of last year. Restricting weapon sales to Israel has been popular with Democratic voters for many years. So can you talk about why you believe our policymakers continue to resist these very popular demands, which, as you just said, are the only way to stop an ongoing genocide of Palestinians?
Esti, I think this is a really important question. And, you know, I think it's also important to note that there have been an overwhelming outcry by, constituents across the country pushing for the ceasefire, no weapons. And we are starting to see the needle move. We now have 130 members calling for some types of conditions on military aid to Israel. That was unheard of before this time period and all that congressional outreach. The elephant in the room here is definitely groups like AIPAC and those kinds of influence machines, like and Centers for Christians United for Israel, KUFI, and really a whole bunch of other NGOs that we don't even really talk about that often that are working to push this influence campaign. And they're doing it through a number of means. They're doing it through the electoral system, pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into our election cycles, this past cycle, and really influencing the debate, targeting pro-ceasefire, members of Congress like Bowman, like Cori Bush, and doing it in a very deceitful way, not even making the conflict in Gaza the focus of their attack ads, but actually trying to do it in again, a sneakier way where, you're talking about other things, but really the goal is to remove people that are critical of Israeli policy. We need to get money out of politics. We need to clean up this whole system. And sometimes I think that if we're going to actually, free Palestine, stop the mass suffering, we're going to have to save our own democracy in the process. So and by getting campaign finance reform and really cleaning up what is, frankly, corruption going on across our, political system. So that's got to be our focus. I think when you do force these big votes and debates, it does a couple things. it divides up, you know, the other side and makes them have to spend a lot of resources running campaigns. I saw AIPAC running ads on this very vote in 17 different states. So again, it forces them to have to expend their resources in a big way, like they're doing right now. And it also allows constituents to hold their members accountable in a way, you know, that we really haven't seen before. We've had a lot of votes that are not really clean on this issue, where you had the Israel supplemental earlier this year. And what was stuffed in that bill was a bunch of stuff we wanted, which was humanitarian aid to Gaza. We want that, right? But again, it also came with all these offensive weapons. So that's not a clean vote, and that confuses and divides up our majorities and divides up members of Congress. We only got 37 Democrats to vote against this, whereas this vote is clearly about tank shells. Should we be selling bombs that the Israeli government used to carry out the Flower Massacre? That's a lot clearer. So I'm so grateful to Senator Sanders and his colleagues for forcing this question, which, again, allows us to have the conversation we've desperately needed for over a year and a lot longer than that.
Right. I am with you on campaign finance reform. As you mentioned, over the last month, the Israeli military has launched what some are referring to as a genocide within a genocide, this campaign of mass slaughter and ethnic cleansing in northern Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are being starved, forced from their homes, not permitted to return. Essential aid like food and medicine hasn't entered the north in weeks, and the hospitals remain under siege. Could successfully blocking all or some of the shipments included in the six JRDs do anything to help save the lives of those hundreds of thousands of people, of Palestinians in northern Gaza that are currently being starved? And if not, is there something that people can do to help those under siege in the north specifically?
Yeah, what we're seeing in the north of Gaza right now is just heartbreaking. It's atrocious. It's cruel. And in their war crimes, cutting off aid to families, it's civilians, children, it's just wrong. And we know that all of these issues are deeply interconnected, and getting aid into Gaza is going to require leverage. And that means threatening to withhold weapons that fuel the conflict. You know, and right now, the occasional threats from the Biden administration to uphold key U.S. laws and policies over humanitarian access, like the Foreign Assistance Act, like National Security Memorandum 20 that they put into place this year over aid access issues and human rights issues, that's not viewed as credible by Israel or other regional actors, because to date, there really haven't been any consequences attached. And that sent a message of impunity to the Israeli government and allowed, you know, what we're seeing, the mass, you know, ethnic cleansing and mass murder of Palestinians in northern Gaza that just keep happening. One bright spot, though, is that we've seen examples in the past where Congress has successfully leveraged military support to allies like Saudi, like the UAE, in ways that have bolstered diplomacy, improved human rights conditions, and, in fact, increased aid access. And after the 2018 Senate passage of the Yemen War Powers Resolution, we saw President Trump, again, we have to look back at that history as we're coming up on a new Trump admin, we saw him halt in-flight refueling for Saudi-led coalition warplanes bombing and starving Yemen, and that helped really compel Saudi and the Houthis to reach the Hodeidah ceasefire, which kept aid flowing to millions of Yemenis and saved what some have said hundreds of thousands of lives. So we've got a roadmap of what to do right now under the lame duck Biden admin, but also during President-elect Trump's time in office, is that we need to keep forcing these votes and debates. You know, as far as what people can do, they need to reach out to their senators, urge that they get on board with the JRDs, and also call for immediate access and the enforcement of 620I, the Foreign Assistance Act.
Okay, well, you just took the words out of my mouth, because I was going to ask, what are the actions that folks listening to us today or who might listen to this as a podcast, tomorrow do to help convince their senators to support these important joint resolutions of disapproval that you've given us so much information about today?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think this is an all hands on deck moment for the peace movement. We need to, be flooding the congressional switchboard with calls in support of the JRDs, sending emails, trying to schedule meetings. Again, I believe this vote's going to come up on Wednesday, so we don't have a lot of time. So Monday, Tuesday, especially folks in California, getting Senator Butler and Padilla on board, getting your House members to publicly support these JRDs as well. You know, they can make a statement and say, hey, send this to the House and we're going to vote yes when given the opportunity. So we need this all hands on deck moment. We have several tools at fcnl.org that can be used to contact your legislators. And I know that a bunch of our partner organizations have tools as well, like USCPR, IMEU, JVP, If Not Now, and the list goes on and on. So we need to, flood the zone, as they say, in the next couple days here.
Hassan, we can't thank you enough. As I said, you are absolutely one of the best, most multi-talented congressional watchdogs who explain things so clearly to us and give us all, great ideas about what we can do to try to influence these people who are supposed to be representing us in Congress, in the Senate, and to try to stop a genocide, the most documented genocide in history.
I am so, so grateful, Esty, for Middle East in Focus. And last but not least, let's say support local radio so we can keep getting this information out there to the American public, because I don't know if you've noticed, the mainstream media ain't doing its job right now on this issue. So I'm so grateful to KPFK and all the great work you do on this and so many issues.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to having you back again. For decades, the U.S. government has helped the Israeli government systematically violate international law with impunity, which has led us to the most documented genocide in history. The Israeli government has shown time and time again that it does not respond to warnings or stern words. The U.S. must end its complicity in the Israeli government's war crimes and stop violating our own existing laws and policies by ceasing the flow of weapons to Israel. There are people in our government, like Senator Van Hollen of Maryland, who believe American foreign policy should be centered on our values and interests, and find the blank check President Biden has given Prime Minister Netanyahu and his far-right cabinet ministers, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, deeply frustrating, and finds Biden's inaction to impose any consequences on them for their transgressions shameful. He publicly attributed the fact that Gaza is a wasteland to Biden's inaction and called the Blinken-Austin letter a political stunt. If he's truly worried about the incoming Trump administration giving a green light to a full annexation of the West Bank, I surely hope that he is spending this weekend whipping votes for the 6 joint resolutions of disapproval, which he has indicated he will vote for, to block specific offensive arms sales to Israel, because providing more offensive weapons to continue this genocide is both immoral and illegal. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Hassan El-Tayyab, Legislative Director for Middle Eastern Policy and Advocacy Organizer for the Friends Committee on National Legislation. I also want to thank Gary Baca for his fantastic production support today. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
This Sunday, November 17th from 2 until 6 p.m. is the KPFK Local Station Board Town Hall Meeting at the Center for Black Power, 3349 West 43rd Street, Los Angeles, 90008 at Crenshaw Boulevard. Dr. Melina Abdullah will speak briefly about the recent elections, and then the board members want to hear from you about how KPFK can better serve the communities of Southern California. This is a great chance to meet your delegates on the LSB, KPFK programmers and management, and to speak